As the political and cultural divides in the U.S. continue to deepen, many are looking to younger generations to see how much they could stem that tide and help reverse course. One of those generations clearly includes current college students who are bringing their diverse experiences into and outside the classroom. During his time as dean of what's now known as the Watts College of Public Service and Community Solutions at ASU, Jonathan Capel had a number of goals, one of which was getting students more involved in actual hands-on public service, and that included the creation of the ASU Public Service Academy. Capel is moving on from ASU to become the president of Montclair State University in New Jersey, and is with me to talk about his time in the Valley. Jonathan, what are some of the ways university students are learning now, whether it's in the classroom or in their communities, and what have you seen change over the past decade?
There's probably two different answers to that. The answer that's nearest and dearest to my heart is that students are increasingly learning by doing. They are intensely focused on serving the community, particularly in the Watts College. And what we've been able to create is a curriculum and a learning experience which doesn't put the doing sequentially after the learning. It knits them together. So every student here is doing internships, is doing projects, is working as an assistant to a professor, just such a wide range of activities where the service and engagement are fused together with the learning experience. That's a big change. And the other one, which is a much broader change, is the introduction of technology and distance into the learning experience. So we're talking about online degree programs, which have exploded in the time that I've been at ASU. And then even because of the pandemic, the introduction of Zoom and the synchronous learning activity, I think that's transformative. And it's not going away. Just because COVID is hopefully in our rearview mirror, that's now a forever part of higher education, I believe.
And how has the diversity of the ASU population, of the Phoenix and Arizona communities, how has that affected, how you've approached trying to have more involvement, having more collaboration with students, and having them be more hands-on?
I think there is a generational component. Younger students today are ready to get into it. And, you know, that's oftentimes said in a sort of snarky negative way, right? That the undergraduate thinks that they should have a C-suite job within a year after graduating. And I get that there's a little bit of an arrogance there, but I'll take it, because what to me it signals is a readiness to get to it. They don't want to spend 10 years learning. They want to be part of the solution now. And so what that means is that you create opportunities for those students to connect what they're doing in the classroom with the work they want to do in the community, and you'll get them pumped up, engaged, and eager to do the work to learn, not sort of enduring some kind of torture. And so I think that the impatience of younger folks is a huge asset. And we need to respect it, not sort of tut tut and say, wait your turn, young person. Mm.
Well, with Jonathan, as you've led those well, is there an impatience with you that is combines well with that, is compatible?
You know, I think ASU is an impatient institution generally. And so that's why I found a home here. As you know, starting from President Crow on down, we've got a group of people that are not satisfied with the typical pace of higher education change. And, you know, you may have heard once or twice that we're called the most innovative university.
I've never heard that, actually. No.
Yeah, no. You've maybe never seen a bus in Arizona either. But what that means is that we are not going to wait until the entire sector evolves. We want to push that. We want to push that evolution so that the university can be responsive to the needs of the moment. Doesn't mean that other universities aren't evolving also. It's just that we're pushing that because of that impatience that you observe.
I want to go somewhat bigger picture. One of the things that I hope that our listeners know you for is the American Greatness series. And I know you did more than this, but certainly many people had a chance to read some of your columns in the Republic. Take us back to that and why you think that was important and what the goals of that were.
My goal in writing those pieces was to encourage people to see the common ground that we do have. And I actually think those pieces are more timely now than when I when I wrote them, I must say somewhat baffled by some of the controversy around talking about our history of racism and discrimination at the same time when most people in Congress voted for the Juneteenth holiday. Like, there's no denying, like, we had slavery, we've had racism. It's not a secret. The strength of the country is that we recognize those flaws and we work to get better. Like, that's the thing that's so cool about this country. Like, we keep trying to get better. We don't deny that we've had problems. And that was like a really important part of that series, was to embrace the things that make us one people. Notwithstanding all of the fights that we've had and the disagreements that we've had, that we have certain common ideals and perspectives, and we need to rally around those. So I appreciate that you raised that, Steve, and you think that has some enduring power, because I do think that there is a pathway to find unity even now. I know that sounds hopelessly optimistic, but I do believe it.
What do you make of some calls, and this happens on the right and the left, maybe a little bit more on the right these days, of what's being called censorship, or the ideas, or in certain campuses, we don't want certain speakers, or whether it's the social media companies that get involved. Are we to a point now where truth is so hard to come by for certain people that it's hard to have that sort of level playing field argument? And does that cause censorship or a perception of censorship? And how much does that hurt us talking about both American greatness and ways to get better?
First of all, I think there is an exaggeration of the censorship and the canceling and all this stuff. And it has been an observation that's been sort of weaponized, as you've said. I think that the biggest concern I have is that people are afraid to engage in genuine discourse, afraid to show vulnerability, afraid to show ignorance. And when people are afraid to share their feelings or their thoughts, it's awfully hard to have a constructive conversation. And so we are in a perilous moment, because without those opportunities for exchange, the suspicion and the lack of understanding all just get deeper and deeper. And this is part of why we've created a public service academy, and it's something that I feel is one of the enduring contributions over the last 10 years, because you have to cultivate the skills to build a civic landscape. That's why George Washington said we should have a public service academy over 200 years ago, before we had a country. He said we need to train citizenship. It doesn't just occur naturally. And that's really what that's about.
That is Jonathan Capel, currently Dean of the Watts College of Public Service and Community Solutions at ASU, but as of August 2nd, he will be president of Montclair State University. Jonathan, good luck. Always good to talk with you. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Steve.